on, everybody? This is your man Cam. I recently did an IG live with my friend Anna Sorrell. She's a dancer out of San Diego. She has her own show called Boba Talk, where she talks to different various dancers, and you know, we talk about the industry and those type of things. But since the current climate of things, she really wanted to talk to a lot of her black friends and kind of just get our perspective on what's going on. We had a really good conversation about just, you know, dance in general, you know, how I'm feeling as a black man in this current climate, and then also how, you know, our other non-black dancer friends could kind of support their friends. It was a good conversation top to bottom, and really wanted to share it with you guys over here. And then also just to kind of give you a little insight about where I'm going to be taking my podcast over the next couple months. I'm going to introduce a thing called My Friends Are Fresh. Well, I'll be interviewing my friends and kind of letting you know and amplify their voices of a lot of the cool things that they're doing. So I think this is a really good kind of kickoff for that, and I'm really excited to share it with you guys. So enjoy.
Hang out for a minute. Cam!
What up, y'all?
What's up? What's up, man? So let's just wait a few minutes. I just want to do a quick maybe intro just to test. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You're fine? Okay.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. So where are you now, man? Where are you living?
I live in Redlands near Riverside.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were in New York because of Nova.
I was for about like 15 years, and then I moved a year and a half ago, roughly, to SoCal. And so I was in Palm Springs first, and then I moved up here.
For work or just to come back home?
My girlfriend, she's an MD, and so she was finishing her residency in Palm Springs, and then we moved up to Inland Empire, San Bernardino.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice to see your face. Oh, there's Richter. Yeah, man, so quick story. Richter chickened out, and he was like, oh, man. You just hit up Cam. Just ask Cam.
The proper term is passing on to someone that talks a lot and has a big
There
mouth.
You go. There you go. Yeah, man. So many years ago that we just used to like nerd out and talk about dance, you know?
I know.
So
I miss
long time.
I miss all the dance nerds. I wish there was more of them these days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, catch me up though. What are you doing now? I know you're a podcast, The Table of Truth, and you DJ.
Yeah. So in New York, I was DJing a lot. I mean, I'm always doing a lot of stuff, but New York, I was DJing a lot. I was still podcasting, and then I was working for Marvel for a little while.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I was there for a couple of years. And then from there, once I moved to California, started doing my own thing, freelancing on social media and doing some other stuff. Because I've been in social media as a job for like 6-7 years now. And so came back when I came out to SoCal. Now I've been doing more design and social media. I'm still we just recently restarted our podcast, like getting back into the habit, maybe in January. So we're now, we just dropped our fifth episode yesterday. But yeah, so now that I've been kind of away from the bigger city these days, still transitioned DJing into like beat making, which has been fun. Shout out to Richter for helping me like understand that better and kind of work with that. But also, I'm just still doing podcasting. Like I work at a art agency in Costa Mesa. And so I'm an art director over there. And then, so just been kind of just enjoying the slower pace of life in the suburbs as opposed to New York.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's good seeing your face, man. So as people come in, if you guys want to just hang out and drop questions, I'll look for them at the very bottom. But let's just kind of just start slow and like let me know like what are your thoughts right now? How are you feeling with everything going on?
It's been interesting because it's more. So we did a podcast about this over the weekend, and you know, my friends and I have had our podcast. We're at, I think we just dropped 154th episode, I think.
Wow.
So on the episode, we were talking about our Black Lives Matter episode, which was 4 years ago, and this was us talking about Alton Sterling, Philando Castillo, and that kind of stuff. And so one of my co-hosts, he actually went back and listened to it, and he was like, pretty much everything we said in 2016 can easily apply for what's going on right now. And so we had a conversation about it. And one of the things that we were kind of just talking about was, you know, the advent of all the, like, I'm not really a protester, but I still understand what's that's going on. And so I think one of the things I liked the most just recently was what Killer Mike said in Atlanta. And he was kind of saying, you know, protesting, that's a very important part of it, which also had devolved into, you know, rioting and looting. And these are all parts of these of the thing. But there's more to be done after everything's over. So, you know, the plotting, the planning, the strategizing, the mobilizing, like those aspects of it. And I think one of the things that I've been seeing popping up, which I really agree with, is people are starting to realize, you know, it's great to protest and to make your voice known. But like, if you're not a protester, that's okay. You can help in other ways, whether it's helping with strategy, you know, helping with planning, or if you're a designer, you know, rocking with other designers to help them help these movements have better design that can communicate their message. So there's other ways than just protesting that you can help. And so don't necessarily feel bad if you can't go out, you know, and protest at that time or whatever. Shout out to Filio over out in England. But I think that's the one thing that I really want people to know, that, you know, how can I help? What can I do? You know, of course, monetary is always good, but then also there's other ways you might be able to help. And I think for me, that's where my mind has been going. Like, it's been less of the hurt and angry part. It's more about, okay, what's our solution? How can we, you know, positively put some, take all this hurt and anger and then put it into some positive direction? I think the homie Cam, he directed me to Styx from Dead Prez, one of his posts, and that's what kind of like what he was saying. He was like, yo, take all that negative energy and then, you know, put it in somewhere that can help the overall conversation as opposed to just, you know, doing that. And I think that was a really good way to kind of look at it as well. It's just like, you don't necessarily, again, not everyone's a protester, but then if you're not a protester, then how else can you help? And whether it's monetary funds, whether it's helping with other people, you know, maybe it's even teaching your friend that doesn't understand why this is such an important thing, like that helps as well, you know?
Yeah, so you said something about right now, like you recognize that you weren't a protester, right? When was the first time you kind of realized that about yourself? Because, you know, sometimes people think, oh, I need to do that. I need to go out there. I need to do something. How did you know that that's not your thing?
Well, I used to work at BET as well. And during BET, that was when, shoot, I'm trying to think of specifically what shooting it was, because at BET, we kind of covered them all. And so I think it was actually, you know, we were putting a package together to kind of to memorize the people that had been passing. It was like Sandra Bland, it was Philando Castile, Alton Sterling. So I had finished the package, legit, went to sleep, woke up, and I had to add two more people into it. And so, and then there was protests and stuff like that. And we had a conversation at work, and I was kind of saying, like, I'm not really a protester. One, I don't like jail. But two, I just didn't really, like, this is not me. Like, I'm out the chanting and the, like, I get it and it's dope. But it, for me personally, I was trying to figure out what's another way that I can help in that realm. And I think that helped me kind of get back. And Richard's talking about Occupy Wall Street. And I was like, I'm kind of with him too. I went down to Occupy Wall Street and kind of saw everything. But then for me, my mind was like, okay, cool to occupy this space. But like, what's next? Like, I was always looking at that aspect of it. And so that to me kind of shows me, I'm like, okay, if my thing isn't going somewhere chanting and being solidarity with a bunch of people, like how else can I kind of, you know, impact and do with what skills that I have. And as opposed to, like you said, protesting is dope, you know, being on social media, you know, giving people tools and all that kind of stuff, that's also good. But on a micro level, how can I also affect as well? And that might just be, you know, having a conversation with someone and helping them learn, you know, why the hurt in the conversation is the way it is in a non-judgmental way. And I think that's, I've done that as well. People hit me up and they're like, I get the anger, but I don't get this. And then I could be, you know, that person to help them with that. You know, not everyone has that mode. Some people I know, they're like, yo, don't hit me up. I have no interest in explaining my Black experience to you. But then there's other people that would be like, hey man, you're my homie. I want to help you understand where I'm coming from. And I think that's a dope thing too.
Yeah. And it's good to hear from you, you know, that everyone deals with this their own way. Like they're dealing with this in a different way. And also you kind of thought forward, right? That's interesting that you thought, yes, we're doing this right now, but after this is done, what else?
Yeah. And that comes with a lot of the more, like a lot of people forget that, like, right now, there's a lot of things going on all at once. So part of it is, you know, COVID and, like, you know, you're staying in place, which is kind of making people stir crazy. Then that, which also begets, you know, unemployment and all that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, you have, you know, Trumpito's in the office and he's an idiot. And so then there's all these different factors. But like the other underlying factor is classism. So it's like, you know, when people stay in, I think what people don't realize is, like, you know, not everyone is hurting right now. Like, there's people with money that are chilling. They're looking for property. They're just, you know, they got their Uber Eats and they're doing all that. So, like, not everyone is, like, angry. There's a whole swath of people that aren't like that. And so there's a level of classism that I think people forget about that needs to be kind of addressed as well. So a lot of the protests and stuff like that, it starts with racism, but it actually has a lot to do with the classism, the wealth inequality, like, you know, the understanding that, you know, if I lose my job and can't work right now, can I, you know, survive for the next 3 months, rent, bills, food and all that? And if I can't, why is that? You know, there's a lot of different levels to these things that aren't just about, you know, white cops beating black people. Like, that's a big part of it. But then the longer issue is, why is that? Well, there's a lot of privilege in there. There's a lot of going back to classism and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different aspects that go to it. That's not just, you know, quote unquote, black and white.
Yeah. And I think two things you said to me that was like, oh, man, there's more things that going on besides this. The pandemic, right? This is going on in the background of the pandemic. People have been on lockdown. They're looking for a place to, like, you know, let out and let loose. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting to me because a lot of people had asked me, like, hey, you know, how are you doing in the pandemic and all that kind of stuff? And, like, me, just personally, like, I went from New York City, where you can literally eat and do whatever you want at any given time. And I love that aspect of New York. Like, I love it too. On a Tuesday, I can go see an amazing artist, or I can see music, or I can go dance, or I can eat food at, you know, any type of food at 4 a.m. to going to the suburbs where none of that's around. So I've kind of already been staying in place for about 2 years. So I didn't. So it wasn't really too much of a stretch for me, because I was kind of like, oh, I guess I have more time. You know, I'm not commuting to work, so I guess I have more time to be creative. And I'd already had made that transition to interacting with my friends through digital means and that kind of stuff. So it didn't really affect me as much. But then I had to step back because I started to see my friends who were really going stir crazy, because they really enjoyed in those human interactions and all that kind of stuff. And so it made me kind of relax a little bit, because, like, for me, this has been fine. Like, I've actually been probably more creative. You know, I'm actually, my productivity is cool, but, like, that's not everyone. And so made me have a little bit more empathy for that, because I'm starting to see how important people value those physical interactions and all that kind of stuff. And so I think the one thing that's been good about this is more people are starting to reach out to their friends and, like, that they haven't talked to in a long time, or having these video chats. Like, you know, I was laughing because on House Party, I think one of my friends accidentally called me, and it was like one of my B-boy friends, and we hadn't talked in a minute, but it wasn't like we're like enemies, or we just haven't talked in a while. And then we started chopping it up, and we're like, oh shit, oh my bad, well, let's have a conversation. And we caught up, and he was letting me know what was up with him. I was letting him know what was up with me. And so having those interactions, I think, was awesome to kind of do that. And so I think for me, I've been kind of just taking that time where I've got people that I'm already, like, I always do a million things already. And so now I've just been kind of just doing that, like, you know, add that creativity, whether it's, you know, on the art side, whether it's on the design side, whether it's music wise or whatever, or even on podcasting and that kind of stuff. So I think for me, I enjoy that productivity in that time. But I also know that for other people, the mental health aspect of kind of just, like, taking time for yourself, like, really being sick, because a lot of people, this is the first time they're alone by themselves for a long period of time. And a lot of people have never actually had to do that. And they're still starting to grapple with that, what that means, you know? And so that I recognize that as well. Like, you know, some people, like, they haven't really just been sat alone with their thoughts in a minute now. And so some of it's a scary place. But in other people, they've been like, man, I haven't really been alone to just, like, not do anything for a while. And it feels good. Like, you know, there's no boss telling me what to do, or some coworker yapping in my face. I can actually just kind of chill a little bit and take a little step back. And I think it really depends on how you look at it yourself. I know people are, like, you know, really annoyed. Then other people, they're just like, oh, I love it. I'm an introvert anyways.
Yeah. So, yeah, you sound like you're speaking from an introvert. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, you know, for me, like, I am a extroverted introvert, if you want to put it that way. Yeah. And so, like, I love talking and, you know, interacting with people. But at the same time, I can completely be myself and just enjoy that and be creative in that. So, but I definitely recognize that for a lot of people, yeah, it's a lot harder. And I think for those people, it's time for them to either A, slow down a little bit, figure out for their own mental health wellness of, like, you know, what is it that makes them a little uncomfortable about, like, not having that interaction with people, or, you know, there's no sports to distract us. So, like, you know, like, oh, maybe I am basic. I don't have a hobby. Maybe I should get a hobby. Like, those small little conversations with yourself to figure out, like, you know, it's completely fine to do absolutely nothing and just binge watch TV and be cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, all these things are all valid ways to kind of deal with, you know, what's going on now. And that will help you later on, because I don't think the changes, there's never going to be a new normal, but there's definitely going to be a lot of changes going on right now. And how you adjust and adapt to that will help you in the long run, I think. So it's interesting now, especially with a lot of the dancers as well. Like, I know a lot of elders that I knew that were very hesitant to do, like, Zoom type, international type calls and, like, you know, do those classes, and damn near all of them got classes
all here.
Now.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, where were you in 2008 when me and my homie Cricket were telling you guys this is the wave?
Yeah.
So it's cool to see that, though. But still, how are you adapting is basically how they're saying.
Yeah, and good point, because we are all forced to be online, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you were adapted to this technology or not, you're here.
Yeah.
And I think that also plays into the anger or what's going on, you know, with seeing the media, seeing the videos. You know, Will Smith said this quote, I thought it was perfect. He said that, you know, racism has always existed. It's been going on. It's just now being filmed, right?
Pretty
what
much.
Do you think?
And it's also, you know, the interesting time now, it's not necessarily that people are more woke or anything like that. It's just that now that it's more accessible, you know, and I was trying to telling my friend, because she asked me about, you know, the George Floyd thing, and she's like, how come, you know, people, and it was a genuine question, not being racist. She was just like, hey, you know, how come there's not as much anger towards the Asian guy that was part of the four people that were involved in this situation? And so I had to, like, first, and then second, I had to be like, well, you know, Vietnamese Americans don't necessarily have a history of systemically, you know, killing unarmed Black people. But also, you know, the longer answer more is it's about, because, you know, again, for Black people, when we interact with the police, we all have different aspects of things that we're thinking about when we're talking to them. Like, I'm from the suburbs. I lived in New York for 15 years. Almost 14 of those was in Brooklyn. Still don't have a hood pass. But my interactions with police are more than likely have been in a positive way, you know, good morning, that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I am very painfully aware that if any one of those police officers have a bad day, my survival rating goes down. And so that's something that I always think about. And that's something that Black people always think about. And I think the empathy part of people not realizing that is the part that for us, it's tiring, because, you know, there was a really good post where someone was like, you know, being a Black person in America is having a really great day and then turning on the TV or your social and then seeing a Black man murdered on live recorded, and then having to talk about that literally the whole day. And so that aspect of it is, there's certain aspects of the Black experience that people, you might not understand it, but you could have empathy for it. And I think that's the underlining theme of what's going on right now. It's more about the empathy. It's like, you know, it's not necessarily like we want you guys to join us and freaking, you know, talk about these oppressions and that kind of stuff. But the empathy part is the baseline of it that kind of starts with it. Because, like, a lot of this racism shit ain't going away. And it's just now more in the light. You know, you have an openly racist president. You have all these officials and that kind of stuff. And that's a whole nother conversation. But it wasn't like he didn't start this shit. He just amplified what was already there. So it's more about that. So I think the empathy for what Black people are going through and what we're feeling, what we're experiencing is a good part, a good start from there. And then from there, you know, hey, help, do what you need to do, donate this, that, all those are great. But that empathy aspect is the part that, as a Black man in particular, like, I actually, for my friends, that's what I would be looking for. Other people want more. They want, you know, this and that. That's great. But I think on a base level, if just the empathy is where you start, I think that goes a long way. To, you know, understanding it. And, you know, when I grew up in Milpitas, California, and, like, you know, I hung with, you know, Filipinos and Vietnamese and Mian and freaking, you know, Chinese and Samoans and this. So I'm, like, very aware of my Asian American brothers and sisters. And, like, so I've been around them and stuff. So I think that empathy aspect of it for me, because, like, same with them. When I learned parts about the culture that I didn't understand, I would ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And then they would just tell me, and I'm like, holy crap. So it's good to have that sharing moment and being able to do that, you know?
Yeah, no, that's dope. That's dope for you to say that. I think people are I guess clumsy about how to have that empathy or how to talk about it or ask, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we're and we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. So sometimes we don't want to talk about it. Like, I'm not here to freaking explain racism to you. Like, But sometimes I might be. And if I am, then hey, ask away. My favorite conversations are always with old, rich white people. They are fucking hilarious because purely because they ask a lot of questions they feel they shouldn't. And because I'm a non-threatening Negro, you can have a conversation and then they can learn something from that. And that's purely just because my parents, when I was younger, they basically kind of taught me and my younger brothers, they're like, hey, you know, we are in a multicultural environment. So a lot of people that you guys interact, this is the first time they'll meet black people that aren't, you know, robbing them or on TV or something like that. So she's like, I'm not saying that you have to be the model citizen, but just understand that your impression to them could be their first impression of a non, you know, stereotypical black person. And so, like, I've had that in my head for a long time. And so if I'm in a position to help that one random white person that thought all black people are lazy, that to not think that, then that actually helps, you know? Like, it's a very micro thing to do from a macro viewpoint. But not everyone is like that. And so sometimes I think part of our podcast is kind of helping with that aspect of it, of letting people know and hear how black men have a conversation about these type of issues and like those type of things.
Nice. Mappy's in here. He's saying hello.
What's up, Mappy?
If you guys want to drop a question for Cam, just leave it down there and I'll check the question cards.
Shout out to all the funky UGs.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's so crazy. They're up in here.
Refugee funks.
Yes. Yes, man. That's hard. I mean, I was trying to think, like, I can't imagine thinking that way, that you're thinking about how you're going to answer, how you're going to behave in front of a white person. You know, you want to set a good example or something like that.
Yeah. And again, that's not for everyone. Like, you know, sometimes we just want to be freaking, we just don't want to talk about it. Like, you know, it's like, so the black man gets killed. You want to talk about it? Nah, man, not really. Like, that's not for everyone. But some people that do, they definitely can, you know? And I think that's something that the other non-black people should understand, that if you do ask a question and a black person doesn't want to talk about it, just be like, hey man, I totally understand, and keep it moving. And
you know,
if it's someone like me that has a big mouth, hey, sure, why not? But you know, understand that, and that, you know, one is we understand, and the other Cam who's on my podcast, he was talking to some of his friends and they were kind of asking questions and they were a little bit awkward at certain points, and he took it upon himself to help with that awkwardness, to have like a dialogue and conversation, which I thought was dope. But not everyone is like that, so you know, just know that. So there's, you know, sometimes we don't want to talk about the systemic racism of the last 400 years you know, but sometimes we do, you know, like I think that's the part that people got to remember, you know. And I think you know, tie it back to like say Gantz and stuff, one of the things that, you know, there's an ongoing conversation is like a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of elders that feel that a lot of the newer dancers don't really understand or appreciate the culture and the history of where that dance comes from, you know? And I think that's something that, like, on a very small and micro level, it's like, cool, if you're really into, you know, said black dance that you've learned and really understand the culture, so that if you're teaching it, you're at the very least passing that on. And I think that's like a small way to just help in the overall aspect of it. You know, I think even when you start to create your own things out of those dances and stuff, but still understanding and still giving homage to where that comes from, that helps just on a larger scale, because, you know, there's no, you know, black dance police running around telling people like, yo, dude, black people created this shit. And there is, and it's annoying, but they're not wrong, you know? And so helping for the non-black people that are, you know, part of this culture and, you know, guests, as a lot of people say, it's not that much of you to be like, hey, this dance was invented by X and this is where it came from. And you should know that if you like this style of dance. And I think that small thing is actually what a lot of people that don't even, you know, you don't got to sit there and be a protester and be, you know, part of the movement, but that small aspect of it helps as well, you know, because I think sometimes that gets lost as the generations go by. So a lot of the newer dancers, they just want to dance and learn, you know, oh, freestyle and this and that, but understand, okay, you're freestyling, but you did, there's five different moves there from five different dance styles, and all those dance styles have history and people that made it, you know? So something like that is very small level, that micro, that a lot of dancers and elders as well, because now we're the elders, which is weird.
It is. It is.
So that's a small way for, you know, the people that are starting to pass it on to the young folks about that, you know, and really understanding, especially, and that's, you know, that comes especially with a lot of the Asian dancers and the white dancers and all that, like, you know, just the acknowledgement of where those dance styles come from and understanding that, passing that from one person to another, that helps so much because it keeps that alive. Because, you know, Don Campbell passed recently and all that kind of stuff. And like,
yeah,
he, you know, he influenced a lot of people. And so if you are part of, you know, the locking community and understand, you understand mm-hmm. how important he was, mm-hmm. but also there's a lot of dancers that do parts of, you know, locking that don't know why he was so important on top mm-hmm. of everything else. So those little small tidbits really speak volumes. And it goes back to the African proverb talking about each one teach one. And that's a very powerful thing, but especially when it comes to dance, like, you kind of have to bring that knowledge along with you. So it's, I don't care if you live in freaking Southeast Asia and you're teaching freaking b-boying, you should at least understand where that came from, why it came from, you know. Don't devoid the Black experiences from those dances, because it's just as important, you know. And like passing that on to that one person that you're teaching, you never know, it might spark something that they might go back and, like, you know, understand the history and go all that. But that little small thing is what you can do to kind of be part of that and to kind of keep that legacy going.
Yes, and it's a huge legacy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hear you. For those people that are teaching hip hop or that are passing that parts of that into their choreography, into their classes, educate yourself, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we have freaking Google now, you know, like, some of the pioneers are still alive. Papa Pete's still alive, Mr. Wiggle's still alive, you know?
Yeah, a lot of them are open to those questions, you know, and be respectful yeah. for it. I think the, you know, every OG is different, you know, and they all have different styles of how they like questions to be formed. There are some OGs that if you ask them a basic question, they'll give you a basic answer. But then other ones be like, hey, you know what? I noticed that if I do this connected to this, that this happens. And another OG, they'll light up. They're like, oh, you're starting to understand the sauce. All right, so try this and this and that. And then you start to understand that there's more of a dialogue to your dance than more than you thought. And I think sometimes, and like, you know, I was in the choreo realm as well in California. And so sometimes that gets lost a little bit when it comes to choreography, because a lot of times, you know, we're putting a lot of different types of movements together into one thing. And, you know, if you don't really know that much about a certain part of the dance that you're pulling from, you're hesitant to let people know about it or whatever. You just kind of throw it into the mix. But, you know, we don't want it to be how MMA is now, where, like, which mirrors kind of like what freestyle dancing is. And you kind of have all these little different pieces put into one, but then they're not really that great at any of those pieces. And so it doesn't mean you got to be a master at those pieces, but you should at least take a little bit of time to go up and, like, you know, listen to that, understand that, where that comes from, why, you know, when you have an all styles battle and a really funky song comes on, you know, that there's a reason why people would start locking to that or boogaloo, as opposed to just, you know, doing something else. Like, the music does inform on your dance, and understanding those different layers. Like, there's not as many dance nerds as I would like. And I miss that aspect of dance just in general. Even if I'm not hardcore into the culture, like, the folks that I know that are still dance nerds, we can still have these conversations now and understand, like, why the deep level of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, awesome. And so Mappy's in here, he's saying he agrees. As someone who teaches the dance, he tries to pass on the info and history and respect the Black culture that created it. And I have someone named Jatan Gunter, I hope I'm saying your name right. In the last 3 years, he's asking, what's been a popular area in the world to look at for dance style?
New York City.
yeah.
No, actually, honestly, it's in the last 3 years, in terms of dance, there's been a resurgence of more hip hop dancing from the cities permeating more. Like, you know, you're seeing, like, Chicago footwork, or you're starting to see, you know, the turfing from the Bay. Like, you're starting to see a little more pop-ups, which is awesome to see that. And then with things like TikTok and stuff, those things are starting to get global. And I think that part's awesome. And I think part of it that we should, you know, remind ourselves are, especially for a lot of choreo dancers, is like, it's dope that you learned the new fad or whatever that's coming out, but understand where that came from and why and how it started to go. Like, if you really want to learn, you know, new dance things, all you got to do is talk to the youth, because, you know, hip hop is a young medium. It's always going to be that vibrant aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times people just don't know that. Like, they just see it on Fortnite, or they just see it on whatever. Yeah. Or you'll see the World of Dance, and they're just like, oh, that's cool, I want to learn that, you know, as opposed to being like, you know, a lot of us when we're younger, we would want, I want to learn locking, I want to learn b-boying, I want to learn house, I want to learn these different aspects. And so I think to search and start to see it, like, you know, you start to look at the youth more and really start to see, like, oh man, there's some stuff going popping off in the South, there's stuff popping off in Chicago, you know, New York has certain things going on, the Bay has stuff, the LA, like, you know, and then on top of that, you know, internationally, you know, international has been doing their thing too. Like, my ex-girlfriend was really into dancehall culture. She was the one that showed me about, like, dancehall dancing and understanding, like, you know, they have their shit is crazy, by the way, but like, they, if you and I are in a dance crew and we make a dance, that's part of dancehall. You know? Oh. And so, but it, now if someone makes a song off of that one dance, boom, that even makes it larger. But there's a lot of foundations and a lot of, because I was wondering, because I was like, there's so many different types of dancehall stuff, but I realized it was an ever evolving thing. So, you know, people, you know, would add to that dance as it went on. So, you know, all the stuff that we see is literally like, you know, the more mainstream popular stuff. But if you go to Jamaica and just go to the, you know, go to Nalinga and go to that, you'll see these small little dances pop off that you're not going to see on TV yet, but that's where it starts, and then it starts to get bigger and bigger. So really getting that aspect of it. Someone had a question there too.
Yes.
But because of COVID, folks are learning to dance at home, from amateurs to folks who potentially may pursue it. I think that's awesome, by the way. I think because we're at home, I think it's pretty good. I think what it is the, now your audience is now bigger. So say for instance, you know, Mappy has a studio and he's doing his thing out there, and instead of his studio being more constrained to where he's from in the Bay, it's now a global thing. It could be, took him from anyone from all over the world. And so I think, you know, there is potential for instructors to go viral in terms of all this different types of stuff. But I think the barrier to access is easy now. So this is another problem as well, because, you know, you have been dancing for, you know, 20 plus years. I've been dancing for 20 plus years, but, you know, our class might have two people, and then the person that went viral on whatever revenge has like 100 people. Now, does that mean that person's a better dancer? No, it just means that person's more popular at that time. And so it's on to the dance community in general for us to educate our students to understand the difference and the levels of that. And that's the part that people really don't get sometimes, because they're kind of like, you know, I laugh, like one of my old interns, she's dancing for a long time, you know, dance with a lot of kids and that kind of stuff. Teaches and all that, and she's really big in like shuffle dancing, which is the Running Man, but whatever. But not to discount it, but to understand that, like, that's a whole section of people that really like that particular move, have classes, instructors, and like a whole movement off of one move that we think is a funny move from hip hop back then, and they've taken it and took off.
And it's like a whole level.
100%. So the barrier to entry to dance is a lot easier now, because, you know, people are starting to see it. That helped with, you know, America's Best Dance Crew, you know, World of Dance and all that. Like, America's Best Dance Crew, I watched it more because our homies were on it, so it was fun to watch them. Like, I loved making fun of Slim when he was on there. That was great.
So I have a question from Kim Thang. She says, what's your opinion on the newest dance trend that sometimes, I guess, the remake is better than the original, like, for example, the Harlem Shake, the Running Man, what you were just saying?
So those things are interesting too, because, all right, the quick story is, when I was DJing, someone came up to me and they're like, hey, can you play the Running Man song? And I was like, nope. And they're like, why? I'm like, go to Google, figure out what song it is and the actual name of it, and then come back. They legit went back, Running Man, could you play the Ghost Town DJs? Because they didn't know it. They only knew it from that viral video of the, you know, Running Man or whatever. This is a Jersey. It's actually a move from Jersey. But anyways, I was laughing because for us with long memories, we can kind of pinpoint where these dances come from and all that. And for a lot of the younger people, they kind of don't know. So it's not necessarily like it's a bad thing that things get remade, because that shines light on something from before. But now it's on us that know where that comes from to educate people about that. You know, so it's like, it's cool that, like, you know, these things come in and, like, you know, it shines light on whatever dance move that people forgot, or the WAP, or it doesn't really matter, like, what comes. But if you're a dancer and you have understanding of the history and all that, then it's on you to educate them about where it comes from and what they do. So it's like, you know, just because, you know, the latest trend might be something, and it's like for to step back a bit, one thing that I learned back then was, like, if I'm ever going to make fun of anything, of a dance or whatever, I will always learn how to do it first. Because, like, how can I make fun of something if I can't do it myself? You know, and like that, you know, in that mentality, but that kind of furthers your dancer, because if you're a dancer, you know how to dance. So don't make fun of all the young kids doing those, like, whatever viral dance or whatever. You should be able to do it as a seasoned dancer just as well as any of those dudes. But then come back with it from a position of understanding and history, and being like, hey, that I know where that comes from. It comes from XYZ, you know, and that comes back with that education, because as you start to get more in the game of dance, that education aspect is very important. And I think sometimes people take it for granted a lot of times, because they're, you know, too busy hustling for, like, you know, money, and they want to make sure that everyone has classes and get in my classes, da 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 da, which is all freaking dope. But, like, as you start to have more knowledge and understanding, you just give all that away, because, like, you're just passing on what learned, you know, someone taught you. Like, me teaching house, is I should be able to teach someone house in a smaller amount of time than I learned it. It might have took me forever to get something right, but now that I know that, I should be able to help someone in a smaller amount of time. And now the feeling and everything else, you're on your own. But the basics, you know, I got you, you know?
Yeah, good point. A lot of dances and movement, they're, like, honed in a culture, in an area, with the people and their lives and their stories. It comes from somewhere. But yes, usually you don't know that. You're just seeing it off of a video game or a latest music video.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it takes a long time before you start to go, oh, yeah, this person created that. Oh, why? And how did that happen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, shout out to Silipo. Yeah, it's true, man. Like, we just got to really, as if you are a quote-unquote elder in dance, which is even funnier as I say this, but, you know, it is on us to kind of educate. Like, we can make fun or we can help, you know? And so it's like, understand where that balance comes from. Because, like I said, a lot of people, they're just getting into dance because they did see it on Fortnite or they watched World Dance. And, like, you know, when I get freaking people are giving me videos of, like, Keone and Mari, like, I always laugh, because they're just like, hey, man, check this couple out. They're so cool. I'm like, oh, you mean Mari, the homie that was in my crew for, like, X amount of time? They're like, oh, my God, you know her? And I'm just like, oh.
Yeah,
so
how funny.
That's the funny part, you know?
Yeah, so Darky has an interesting question. He says, hey, do you think there's discrimination in the dance community? And if so, what does it look like?
I mean, that's a heavy, heavy topic. To sum it up in a smaller way, there's a lot of discrimination overseas, definitely. Unfortunately, there's a shout out to a lot of our international folks that, you know, employ a lot of dancers, that, you know, give them the opportunities and that kind of stuff. That's dope. Like all things, it's a very subtle nuance of that. So it's kind of like, you know, one of the frustrations as being Black in dance is that aspect of it, where you see, you know, someone elevated at a very high level in terms of getting the gigs, going on world tours, that A, is not that good, B, doesn't really have an ear to the culture, but then C, is a lot better about marketing themselves or branding themselves. So on that aspect, there is a slight, you know, bias towards that. But then also too, you know, as Black people in dance, we know that. So now how are we going to overcome that? So I think there is a slight bias to it, and shouldn't even say slight, because I know there's people that have experienced some really, really heavy stuff. You know, they've had, you know, gigs canceled because of, you know, where they're from, what they look like, and that kind of stuff. For a dance that's quote unquote ours, something that we, you know, made. And so for the non-Black people that have seen that happen, like, that's where you guys come in. You know, it's like, if, you know, someone that is not of color And then they ask him, hey, man, can you teach us how to twerk? And he'd be like, you know, it's really not might not be my place to teach that. Maybe you should look at these other, you know, black instructors or dancers that have more knowledge. They're way better, you know. Those type of things, that's the kind of allies we kind of need within the dance community, where it's like there are a lot of black dancers that don't get those opportunities, that are just as qualified and just doesn't do it. So,
yeah. And so, I noticed, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem.
Okay. I noticed that in hip hop dances and freestyle dances, lineage matters. Who you learn from,
yeah,
like what you're doing, and like you said, giving credit and giving props to your teacher.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's kind of like, because now is everything's like instant, you know, whatever. It's like the dancers are just now getting looked at like, this is a product, like give it to me now kind of thing.
Pretty much. Yeah. And then again, that's always going to be the case. You can't really, it's going to be there, but that doesn't mean you need to, participate in that. And I think that's that aspect of it too, where it's like, you know, there's tons of people, like what I learned, like I learned house initially from watching like videos from Japanese people. Like I got, you know, I got one of the Serial Style Steppers DVDs from one of their, the Japanese dance videos. Me, I think it was like Mappy and I think Dennis, and a couple other people were watching it, and we're like, oh, okay. But going to New York, I learned who those guys learned from. And I was like, okay. I get it now, you know? But again, you know, like you said, you know, dance before was like, who did you learn from? You know, and for specifically when these styles come around. But now that there's an amalgamation of all these different things, now it's like there's less of a lineage. Like, you know, say, for instance, we were talking about Funkonometry earlier. And like, you know, there's a lot of people that came out of Funkonometry that are doing some dope ass shit. You know, shout out to Sean Evaristo and like, you know, Mappy and, you know, Mari and like and everyone else that owned, like, you know, Emerson, of course, and owns the studios and stuff like that. So, you know, the lineage aspect of it, that's, and that comes back to us too, because we have to kind of make sure people understand that and know that. So as we teach younger people and all that, so that will kind of help with that expectation, so that, you know, say if you're, you know, black and you help create a certain style of dance, like your students are the ones that are going to help you get your message out and spread out that way. Because a lot of times people won't go back to the source. They're like, well, I could hire that black guy, or I could just hire the white kid that he taught that's closer and cheaper, you know?
That's,
and
like, true.
That mentality is way more prevalent than, you know, what's going on, you know?
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, it's the, you know, and Victor said the result and pressure to fill the timeline outweighs the studying, and the culture aspect is 100% true. You know, like a lot of people, they're just not really about that life. Like they're not really deep into this like a lot of people were, you know, before. And so you can account for it, but then you have to figure out, okay, now that I know that, how am I going to be better? How am I going to, you know, succeed in spite of all that? And so it's one thing to, we can holler and hoot about, you know, other people getting jobs that we're not getting, or we can figure out a different revenue model or a different way to reach out to the people that we want.
Yeah, you know what I noticed about you, Cam? You're very solution focused. You're always thinking of what to do next. Are you there?
Yeah. Sorry about that. It's always about like it's more about the forward thinking. It's always like, you know, thinking back, because I think, like I said, everyone has different roles to play. And so like, say for instance, like I was never a great b-boy. I like b-boying, I have really good rhythm, I can dance really well, but b-boy wise, my moves are very limited and all that stuff. But I taught way better because I had a better understanding of the dance and then how to impart what I did know to someone else. And so that I understood where my role was, and I was cool with that. Like I'm never gonna be, you know, a very, very famous b-boy. And I'm same with house, like I learned from really, really amazing people and I pass it on to people that I know. I've taught some really dope b-boys that are doing some dope shit now, but that's not on me to freaking brag about. I don't care about that aspect of it. It was more about teaching someone else. And so I like coming back from a big step back and look at everything from there and see how those pieces kind of move together, you know?
Yeah, that's dope. And thank you for being down just to share today, you know?
Yeah. It's always it's always fun to chit chat and be a dance nerd for a little while.
Yeah. And so today I heard you say three things, that if we wanted to be supportive, to show empathy, that, you know, not all your black friends want to talk about the definition of racism or talk about what's going on, like just give them some space. Number two, as a dancer, if you're out there and you're an educator, then pay respect to the roots. Teach your students where the dances come from, specifically the styles.
Yeah.
And then number three, even if you're not a protester, that's okay. There's other ways that you could help.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely true. And I think, someone else said, you know, it's so weird to judge people because of the way they look as a, or their culture instead of their talent. And that's 100% true. Like, that happens to Black people all the time. sad to say, you know, it's like, that's why when I empathize when a lot of non-Black people get a lot of shade from people because they're kind of saying, you know, you might not be doing hip hop or you're not doing this or that, or whatever. I've seen that before. I empathize with them. But sometimes I think the difference is kind of understanding where that comes from. Because, like, you know, we all have to figure out how we all play a role in this, you know, thing called dance. And so there are a lot of people, a lot of us Black dancers that do get annoyed at, like, you know, certain dance styles, and they're very vocal about it. But so then now it's like, okay, if you're very vocal about it and you don't like that, well, have that dialogue with them to understand why they don't like that. Maybe they're looking for you to have more depth in your dance, or maybe they were looking for you to explain it better, you know? And, you know, all the, and that just comes again, just to communication and dialogue, you know, those things are like the, that helps with pretty much all these things. And so even these current times, like if people are confused about what to do and like all that kind of stuff, you know, reaching out to your friends and having them have those conversations, and the folks that kind of just not want to talk about it, respect that. The people that do, have a good dialogue, ask good questions, and really have a better understanding of what's going on. The last thing you do is just to say stupid shit.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't know, just be quiet, yeah, and be fine. Like, I'm not saying be silent as people talk about, but like, you don't need to add to the dumbness. You can just ask the questions, you know? And, you know, if you really don't know something, then you need to find people that you can trust that can help you get those answers. Because that's important. Like, that's more important than having a Facebook random or some tweet or some, you know, Instagram message about some dumbness. Like, nah, man, if you really don't know or don't have a trouble about understanding what's going on in this current climate, then seek out others that, excuse me, might have the same questions. And then that, you know, get a coalition together, you know. Like, luckily I have a good friend set that I can do that with, bounce ideas off of. Like, same thing with you in terms of Dance Collective and all that kind of stuff. And part of the reason we had our podcast is because we realized that not everyone has that. So us having these conversations about certain topics helps other people too, you know? And I think hopefully in the future, we'll see more like dance conversations like that, like more dance nerd conversations that people can kind of understand about a lot of the legacies and all that. Because I think, you know, each part of dance has rich culture and rich histories that can be shared with the young ones. And I think the young ones might not necessarily know, you know, they might not know why, you know, of the Mind Tricks is an important group in the Bay Area, or why people care about Culture Shock San Diego in Southern California. Like, what are these things that people talk about? I just know, like, little, you know, touches or whatever. So a lot of people's dance knowledge is very short. So we have to help them and understand, so give them a little bit more history.
Yeah. And now it's kind of safe too, because they're in like these kind of like Zoom rehearsals, you know, since no one can gather. So I was in a Zoom rehearsal the other day where people were asking questions, and maybe they're young, so they don't know. And it's okay. They don't sound dumb, you know, because I think that's what it is. People don't want to sound dumb. They don't want to, like, you know, they're afraid of how a question may offend or may sound ignorant or whatever. So it's kind of hard to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you have those private conversations, or those conversations, you know, where you can have those things. Because I think, specifically when it comes to, these type of issues, you know, there's racism in dance. We know this, but it can go on different areas, from Asian people, white people, and Black people, and all that kind of stuff. So having that dialogue and conversation of how we could go be better is a lot better than just ignoring it or just going along with it. You know, like, you see racism shit happen in the dance community, call that shit out and let other folks know that that shit's not cool. Like, that's a very,
Cam's internet.
I think, you know, having those conversations and really, having those conversations and really understanding what's up is very, very important, you know?
Yeah, just want to say what's up to some people. Alan Frias is in here. What's up?
Oh, Stacy? Shit, Alan, what up, dude?
And Maggie says, Hey, Cam, you're dropping all kinds of gems in history today.
I know. I think one of the things I forget sometimes is, like, you know, we might have these conversations a lot, but I sometimes forget that not everyone else is privy to it, or might not understand or not know those kinds of history tidbits and stuff like that. You know, I'm from the Bay Area. I've lived in New York for a long time. I was around a lot of amazing dancers, a lot of history. I got to, you know, learn and listen and ask a bunch of questions and debate with a bunch of elders, which is probably one of my favorite things. You know, yelling and debating at 4 a.m. on a Saturday night about the history of dance. It's freaking amazing.
You love it. I know you love it. Yeah.
But those are those things that sometimes I forget that not everyone gets privy to. So it's good to kind of, like, put that out there and let people ask questions and kind of give that thought. Because just, you know, once you're part of dance, you're always going to be part of it, whether you're dancing all the time now or not. Like, you know, the good thing about your Boba Talk now is you're starting to talk to some of your friends on that level that, like, they might not be hardcore in the circles anymore, but they just have just as much knowledge as the person that's the it dancer of the moment, you know? Yeah. And so making sure that we add our voices to that and, like, help that legacy and all that will always be a good thing to kind of share that knowledge, you know?
Yeah, and I appreciate dance so much more, right? Because, I mean, really, without it, I don't think I would have learned from so many different people, diverse backgrounds. I mean, that's what it was always like for me. Like, on any dance team, it was diverse. Same for you? What was your experience?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I learned being part of, you know, different, like, or being around more dancers and that kind of stuff taught me the different aspects, because, like, I was way more into, like, just freestyling and, like, DJing and b-boying and not really understanding about choreography, like, why, how difficult it was, or, you know, syncopation and those kind of things. And so and then also learning from different dancers that had different takes on dance, like, you know, not some people came from ballet, or, like, you know, people came from modern, or, you know, some people, you know, their whole dance ends and starts with Janet Jackson. Like, I didn't understand that, you know, like, But being around people like that gave me a lot more appreciation for it too. And so learning those different styles, even if it wasn't something for me, like for me, I learned like basic Vogue and whacking when I was in New York. And it was funny because the person that was teaching me, he was teaching me some Vogue. He's like a 6'5" buff gay black dude. And he was like, all right. He's like, I'm teaching you to be fierce. And, like, I was like, all right. He's like, but, you know, again, you, as a straight male, you can be fierce, but how would you do that? And how would you, you know, get that across? And so it was really funny because I never thought of it that way. Because, like, you know, usually when I think of fierce at that time, and I was being ignorant, it was like, oh, fierce is kind of a gay term or a woman term or something like that. Feminism, I should say, more feminine. Yeah. But then I didn't really thought about being as a straight man, how am I portraying fierce in my dance? And so it was a really good question because I really had to think about it. I was like, okay, how am I going to portray this dance that is based in, you know, LGBTQ culture, make sure I represent it well and not like I'm parodying or just making fun of it. And, like, how am I really representing it, you know? And so it was fun to, like, really sit down and think about that aspect. And I would have never had that experience if I wasn't open to having that conversation and understanding that. And so I think dance can help you have a lot of those interesting conversations and learn a lot that you might not have normally do in your normal work time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So let me just read this comment. Sila Poe, I also believe in trusting that people will eventually pick up the knowledge about culture too. Some people hop on and dance for trends and then they leave. But he does believe the ones who stick around will eventually pick up the culture knowledge and spread.
I mean, and people will. I mean, there will always be culture vultures. It's just something that you have to, again, a lot of these issues that happen in dance, they're not going away. You know, like, it's just, you know, a lot of issues that black culture has gets mirrored in dance and just in different the ways.
Ooh, so, good point. Yeah.
So that's why it's kind of hard to, that's why I understand when people have for certain frustrations in dance, because, like, that's something that's in black culture for a long time. So you have to understand that, like, some of those things are never going away, but now that you know about them, now what are you going to do about it? And how are you going to combat it? You know, it's like, you don't worry about culture vultures. They're always going to be here. They'll come in for the flash of the pan, make their money, do what they want to do, and then keep it moving. But they have no impact on how you learn dance and how you want to perceive dance. And I think that's something to really understand. Like, there's always going to be the whack-ass dude that makes hella money. It's just always going to happen. But, you know, is if you're into dance and that if you're, you know, if this is going to be your livelihood and you want dance to be a main thing, then learn all aspects of it. Understand the business aspect, understand the cultural aspect, understand the history aspect. And then that way you can decide for yourself how best to have a sustainable living within dance.
Yeah, I hear so much resilience in your thoughts, right? Like how you think, forward thinking, what can I do? Think about what I can versus what I can't control.
Yeah,
is that exactly. Is that a learned experience or did someone teach you that?
It's mixed. I think, you know, as I started to, especially as a creative, like, you know, my day to job is I'm a designer. I'm an art director now at the agency, but I've always been like more into the creative aspects of it. The biggest things I've learned over the last 5 years is to understand the business aspect of being a creative. And it's like, it's awesome to be creative, but if that is going to be your main source of income and this is going to be a sustainability, there's other aspects of it that you got to learn to balance everything out. So it's like, it's not enough anymore just to be like, oh, I like drawing. Yay. But how are you going to draw and feed your fam and put rent in there? Like there's aspects of business, there's aspects of marketing, there's aspects of, you know, understanding these other aspects to inform you. And just like in dance, like, if dance is really going to be what you want to do for the rest of your life, and this is your, you know, source of income, then you got to learn about all the other aspects of dance, you know, organization, marketing, branding, you know, social media, all these things. And if you're not good at it, find a homie that is, so they can plug those holes that you don't have, you know. That's the really important part of just not staying and reveling in our creativeness. We're just like, I just want to be creative and that's all I want to do. That's cool. But understand that people that are less creative but better at those other things will probably be more successful. So, you know, you have to kind of find that balance for yourself. Not everyone is a business person. Not everyone is an entrepreneur. That's completely fine. But still understand that and then have a plan to kind of balance that out.
Balance. Okay, nice. And so we have a few minutes left, Cam. Again, thank you for doing this and just catching up with me and doing a boba talk, you know, just out of these crazy times. Last thing you want to leave the people watching, anything you want to say, last thoughts?
I think the biggest thing I want to say is just be very mindful on just each one teach one. That's like the best thing I could say, because I think as you get older, especially when it comes to dance, like I said, I was making fun that we're OGs now, but understanding that to like, you know, other dancers are coming into dance for completely different reasons that you did. And so it's not a bad thing that they're not as hardcore about your specific style, but understand that they're coming in from a different way, but you can teach them and help them grow as well. And so like, you know, someone taught you, so take the time to teach them. Like for when I was learning house in the Bay, I was pretty bad. Just kind of just did it just because I liked it. And then when I went into New York, you know, I went to shelter and I was super excited and I was like dancing and hopping in the circle. Older black dude came over to me, put his hand on my shoulder and was like, nope. And then he took me to the side and I basically relearned all my basic house steps in that night. Wow. And shelter goes until 7-8 in the morning. But like, I don't even know what that dude's name is. I forgot what he looks like. But he took the time to teach me, who was super excited about something, and taught me the basics to like, helped me on my dance journey. And I never forgot that, because someone is always going to be in that realm where like, they're just not going to know. And so how would they know if someone didn't take the time to teach them? So, you know, it's something to be said for a lot of the teachers that are out there. Even if you're not a teacher and you're just helping others in dance, that like, just teach, you know, like each one teach one. It doesn't mean that you have to have a Zoom call with 100 students. It could just be you showing your friend how to do the Dougie and do it the right way. So just basically keep if you keep that in mind when you're doing dancing, it's a lot less frustrating. It's a lot more fun.
Yes, good message. So you heard it here. Cam is saying each one teach one, and that goes for everything
basically
across the board. All right, homie, stay safe out there.
Yep,
thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, if people want to follow Hey DJ Cam Instagram, my podcast is The Table of Truth. And yeah, man, have fun.
Yes. And I hopefully I'll see you on one of these again. Okay?
Yeah, definitely. All
right.
It'll be fun. I think it'll be a good one with like me and Richter, you and Matthew.
Yeah.
Dance nerded out.
Yes. Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Peace out, Cam. Bye.
See you later.